Dad, I need my privacy. Don't read that. Mom, don't you trust me? We hear this as parents. If you think back to the 20th century, we also said it as kids. But unlike our childhood experience, today's children are digital natives and the internet is their second home.
As parents today, we want to protect our children from the risks and harms of life online. We need to establish proper boundaries for our teens. But at the same time, we want to give our teens and our kids the freedom to explore, grow, make mistakes, and develop resilience. Just like our parents, we face the universal challenges of parenthood, striking a balance between providing guidance and oversight and giving our kids enough space to grow into successful adults.
What does this mean in the digital world? More specifically, how much online privacy do we give our kids? It turns out, this is a surprisingly controversial question. Hi, I'm Mark Roman, a tech policy expert and former White House advisor on privacy.
I'm David Reitman, an adolescent medicine doctor who works with teenagers.
We're also married
to each other
and raising a teenage son of our own.
You're listening to Their Own Devices, a parenting podcast with practical advice for the 21st century.
David, do you think as a pediatrician, as an adolescent medicine specialist, do the kids have a right to privacy? Do they need privacy?
I think that the idea that teenagers are going to want privacy and should be given some amounts of privacy is something that we've been doing for generations. And I think it's important to put a caveat on that, that privacy, just like independence, is a responsibility. And it is something that is earned. And I think that's not something that, you know, your kid turns to 12 years old or 13 years old and you say, okay, you get to have privacy now.
Before we get to the digital world, what is your view on a kid's right to privacy or the need to have privacy, whether it's with respect to their medical discussions with you or what is in their room or what they're doing in their room?
Yes. In the real world, teenagers are entitled to some degree of privacy. And when it comes to patients that I see, I actually make that part of the first visit that I have with them and saying that you will be entitled to some degree of privacy. But I will say that even as a doctor who sees patients one-on-one with the parents out in the waiting room, there are limits to how much confidentiality and privacy these teenagers are legally even allowed to have. So if there's something that's going on where the kid may not be safe in some way, where their life or health might be at risk, in those situations, I let them know even before we start talking that I'm going to have to bring a parent in.
Let's move to the digital world now. You know, I can see the parent thinking that, hey, I provided you this cell phone. There is absolutely no right to privacy, and it's not yours, versus the kid's perspective, which is they may believe that their phone is sacred and private and is the equivalent of a diary. And so that kid and that parent are not seeing the situation in the same way. Who's right?
Well, it's not equivalent to a diary. Let's be very clear about that. A diary is something where kids are going to write things about their personal life, and then it's supposed to be kept under lock and key and hidden. But the stuff that goes into a diary is typically not going to be put online for everybody else to see except for the parent. So I think there's a big difference there. Once again, it depends on the kid, it depends on the age, and it depends on what they've demonstrated in terms of maturity and able to handle this. So giving a 12 or 13-year-old a smartphone and the ability to message and communicate with their friends, great. But there has to be an expectation that there's going to be some monitoring at that point. And once again, as the kid starts getting older and can demonstrate that he or she is trustable, that's where they can sometimes back off on this a little bit.
Well, what about the argument that if a parent does monitor their kid's online activity and either it's spot checking manually or using a parental control software, that you are damaging the trust relationship between parent and kid, and that you're even setting up a parent versus kid situation, even for maybe good kids?
Okay, let's be honest. Part of being a teenager and having an adolescent, you know, as a parent, is the fact that there's going to be conflict, okay? And there's going to be push and pull over these kinds of issues. And so is it damaging the trust? Yeah, it might be. But you know what? A lot of times kids are not ready for that kind of responsibility. And so I would actually say that remembering that kids want to feel safe. And this is part of parents helping to show their kids, we're going to keep you safe. So I don't have an issue with this. And once again, there's not one right way to do this. But I think that, once again, privacy is something that has to be earned over time. It's not something that's just given to a kid because they turn a certain age.
To continue our conversation about privacy and digital technology, we are joined in the studio today by two fantastic guests. We have with us Terrell McSweeney. Terrell is currently a partner at a law firm here in town, Covington, but previously served as a commissioner at the Federal Trade Commission, and before that worked with Vice President Joe Biden and many others, and she's a mom. And also with us is Nuala O'Connor. Nuala is the president and CEO of an organization called the Center for Democracy and Technology and works on some of the most important and cutting edge in technology today, also a mom. And so I'm going to ask our guests to introduce themselves, share a little bit about their families and some of the choices they've made. And then we're going to dive right into their views on monitoring kids' privacy and help us solve all this. So, Terrell, let's start with you. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be part of the pod, and I've been really enjoying, as a parent, the inaugural broadcasts of it. I think we both share an FTC love and background, so for me, it's been really fun to hear some of the discussions around the Children's Online Privacy Act and all these other kind of interesting legal and policy questions as well.
Well, great. And so tell us, where you're here as a mom, so tell me about your family.
Well, I have two kids. They are 8 and 10, so they are at the beginning of transitioning into more active digital presence, let's say that. However, they're also digital natives. You know, they're born and raised with these devices around them basically all the time. And so as a parent, one of the things that I've been thinking about all along throughout their childhood is both my own uses of devices around them, and epically failed in many respects around that
it's
question.
Hard.
It's really hard.
Left of the club, yeah.
And then also their uses and what's appropriate.
I have to ask, because it's dying to know, does your 10-year-old have a smartphone?
No.
No.
And I would love to discuss that. It's been a big topic in our house. We recently, and for the first time, actually for Christmas, got him his own laptop. Mostly because we were finding that for homework purposes, he needed to have one at home. He's using a Chromebook at school.
A 10-year-old needs a laptop now for homework.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He's a fifth grader.
Yeah, okay.
We live in Washington, D.C. So we've been having a really active conversation around both my husband and I about this question, and then with our 10-year-old as well. That had this interesting knock-on effect, which is the 8-year-old decided that the family iPad was now hers because he has a laptop.
Got it. Okay.
So, a whole can of worms. We're still working this one out.
Okay. Well, we're going to come back to that because I can't wait to talk about that laptop and a 10-year-old. Nuala, welcome.
Good to be here, all of you.
All right. So, we're psyched to have you here. Tell us about your very simple family.
Super simple, yeah. People say it's the Brady Bunch, but there are 2 adults and 6 children, plus the nanny actually in the house. So my partner's kids are 19, 17, soon to be 18, and 15. My children are 14, 12, and 9. And so we have 4 girls, 2 boys. They get their smartphones at 10 each, and they're really clear limits.
So we have 1 13-year-old. And I find that challenging. Terrell has 2 kids. For a time, you had 3. Now you've got a combined household of 6. How can you possibly manage 6 kids who are going to be different at different levels of maturity, but they now all have devices? But how are you attempting that? Because I can't figure it out.
For me, it's all about setting boundaries around the use of technology. I think that's almost, we'll get to all the privacy and the rules we've set, and it might surprise you how my position on privacy for my kids is not what it might be for the rest of the world, but
I'm with you. My view on privacy for me.
Yes, right, exactly. And we need to create policy that reflects all of that, right? But I have tried on and off to do something called Digital Sabbath, which is really nice because we actually now observe real Sabbath in our house as well, where there's a day when everybody's off their phones. But I'm also ruthless about, you know, there are no phones, no devices, no toys, no nothing at the dinner table. You will sit down and you will talk to each other. You will look at each other. Everybody's phones are on the kitchen counter at 9 o'clock at night. That includes mom and dad. You know, these are harder to enforce on yourself.
Does that really include mom and dad?
No.
I didn't think
no,
so.
No, you're absolutely right. Okay. I'm lying.
I'm just calling you on it.
As you should, call
because we have I can't even imagine that.
Absolutely right.
We have that rule in my house, and I've, you know.
I think it's better, though, when there are no phones in the bedroom. Like, I really actually think that's a really healthy thing for all people. And I might describe myself in terms of the controls part of it as a free range parent in that I wanted them on early, young, and in the kind of wild internet, but it's always out in an open space where I can observe what's on the screen. And I have been hammering them with the no personal information, no names, no pictures, no nothing. So at this point, there is a lot of autonomy, especially for that kind of 12 and over set. They've got a lot of autonomy about what they do online, but we definitely set boundaries about it. And I'm checking up. I've got everybody's passwords. I've got everybody's access.
I mean, you do.
So I do the spot checks. That's my theory is you can use them until you prove you're not capable of using them. And then there's going to be some real draconian, you know, pullback. And there has been with several of them, not all of them, though. Every child is different, as we know, right? And it's not always age or gender that's determinative. Oh. Every child is developing differently.
So, Terrell, you are like not just deep in this issue. I'm going to say maybe drowning in this issue. What did you do with the laptop what are your rules? And did you choose to use any kind of parental controls at all? And if so, what? And what's on the laptop?
So I feel like I'm the poster child for the busy parent who's well-intentioned, okay? In that I'm like literally a subject matter expert on this, and I've spent a lot of time at the FTC also thinking about children online specifically, and not just their privacy, but what's happening to them. Up until this year in our family, there was a rule of no electronics except for Kindles to listen to audiobooks. That was the exception, especially since I have one child that's dyslexic, so it's one way that he consumes a lot of his reading material. No electronics during the school week, full stop. Easy to monitor. And it was working really well until the homework thing started happening. And then all of a sudden Mom, but I have to get on your computer. Mom, I have to get on the computer to do this. And I need this and this and this. And I'm trying to do it in the family iPad and the kitchen table. That's not working. It has to be on the laptop. So the homework thing really has started to muddy those waters. And moving off of a bright line rule.
I have to ask this, because I think we're going to do an episode about this, about tech and school. How did you feel about that?
I absolutely freaked out. The first homework assignment that came home, and it was actually on some app, and I didn't even know that my kid had an account on the app and has a homework assignment on it. And this is not a thing I've even been aware of up until this moment. And now I have to put it on on my computer for him, you know, and I'm like, I don't want to do this either. And I don't even know what this is. I kind of exploded. My more fifth graders like really freaked out by my level of anxiety. And then I, you know, dash off this note to the teacher saying, look, we have this rule where we don't do electronics during the week.
Oh, so you did follow up.
Yeah. And so I don't know how to do this. So he's not doing this assignment tonight. And then my husband came home and he was much calmer about it. And he kind of looked at me and he said, why are you having this reaction? This is going to be normal. He's got to have this stuff. In fact, it's going to maybe help him learn all these things. And you need to calm down about this. And we got to have a plan here. So rational cooler has prevailed.
And clearly, I'm you in the household.
You and I, privacy professional. Right? We're like, so began. This was September, a kind of multi-month exploration of, does the child actually need to have a laptop? Turned out we thought at the end of the day, yes, this will all be easier for everybody if he's doing his work on his, because what happens when he's getting on and off our laptops is our adult content is on there, right? And we don't have the same level of kind of control and clarity about what he specifically is doing. I also think good to begin to have a conversation really about how are you going to use this? Okay, this is going to be a tool in your life and you need to be able to use it properly. Now, when we decided on devices, we at home, we've been using Apple, so we decided to get him an Apple. For us, it was easier because we felt we could really implement the parental controls and monitoring of his accounts and passwords and everything more easily if we were all in the same ecosystem. So that was a choice that we made. We've explained to him, and this was true when the kids were accessing and using the family shared iPad, that we are monitoring kind of at all times what he is doing. We've allowed him to start texting with a group of friends, but I periodically open the laptop and read all the text messages. And actually, it's been really interesting because it's been a great way to talk to him a little bit about his social life at school, some of the things that are happening there.
So you talked about the ecosystem and using technical parental controls. are you using what, like screen time, or what are you?
We are in the process of deciding exactly what controls we're going to use. And so this is a dialogue basically between my husband and I. And we haven't implemented a kind of heavy duty set yet because he's not really unattended on it. Although, this is where I'm going to get real. Of course he is on Saturday and Sunday mornings. When my bright line rule about no tech during the week goes away, I want to sleep late and the child is on. And he's mostly on YouTube.
Of course. Get used to that.
And so we've had a lot of conversations about what's appropriate. I was like, what do you do when you start watching something and you feel is inappropriate? And he says, well, I don't watch it. I said, how do you know it's inappropriate? He said, usually the language.
Right.
So it was an interesting, but that's where we are.
Before Nuala tells us how it does or doesn't work in her home, I want to ask the more theoretical Terrell, which is, what is your view on this? So there are all kinds of parental controls. A subset of them actually allow you to monitor the content of your child's communications. So you said, and there are different ways to do it. You can only read text occasionally, but you could, if you wanted to, get sent the content of every text and social media posts. And there's a whole range, but a lot of parents are doing that and take a view that you are a child, you are in my home. And with respect to your parents, there is no right to privacy and these devices really aren't yours. So that's the rule. You're not quite there yet. So theoretically, where are you?
I want them to learn how to be privacy advocates for themselves, but I firmly believe that right now as 8 and 10-year-olds, they have no privacy from me. And I feel like we're going to be in a kind of dialogue going forward about when they are going to start getting some of those rights of privacy from me. It's definitely not yet. And because I do want them to come out the other end having those spaces. You know, I actually had a conversation with both kids saying that I was going to do this podcast and talk a little bit about them because I also think, it's important to have a two-way conversation.
Right.
I've heard you say this before on the pod that you also talk to your kids about when you're posting pictures of them. I've dialed way back on posting pictures of my kids at all as they've grown older. And I do now usually ask them if I'm going to do that, if I do it at all.
Which is another aspect of the privacy discussion. It's not the same as monitoring, but for sure, kids, I think, would have as they get older, a privacy interest in what we call sharenting, right? The parents posting the pictures.
But this is why I want them to have a sense of this as an aspect of their identity and something that they want to learn how to control. And so I think it's important to be in that dialogue with them as well.
All right. Nuala?
I think this
walk
is
us through
very
it.
Consistent. I'm going to say the three C's that I think about in this conversation is the conversation, the contract, and the consequences, right? We did all of this. We did the conversation about the phones and the contract about the use of the phones and what the consequences would be if they, and part of the contract was, I need all your passwords. I need all your screen names. I need all your identities. I need all your, and if I ever find that you have an account that's not on the list and there's a yellow legal pad in my bedroom, then the phone's going to go away for a period of time, a month or whatever. And we've had the challenges enforcing.
Do you think your high school students don't have Finsta accounts?
No, they do. They absolutely do. And so there have
they
been.
Do have them.
They do. And there's been consequences for not fessing up to them quickly enough.
Wow.
I'll tell you, my daughter once screamed at me, you work in internet privacy and I have no privacy. So they get, what is going to push your buttons. These are just tools and examples of the tension I think parents have always had. And if you're having a good open conversation with your child, yeah, there are probably things they're doing online that are less desirable. And it's good to have a safety net. Like sometimes my sister will call and say, your child's cousins have reported her Instagram has some maybe inappropriate language or something that might look a little whatever. But the daily conversation, the kind of really open door conversation and parenting, I think helps me feel that the spot checks are enough. I wouldn't say that they have no privacy in the house. They realize that they are growing into greater assets or greater respect or greater space. And we've had some steps forward and some steps back. It's not been a completely linear process, but I do think they have some zone. I think they are their own digital self, as Terrell was describing earlier, that they have some rights and some boundaries, but they've got a safety net of knowing that we're checking. I mean, candidly, I'm checking not every night, but I'm the one that takes the phone downstairs and I, do a quick scan of what's happened on the phone.
So it's kind of interesting. I'm sitting here thinking about this and in hearing these conversations, and I'm chewing on this and saying to myself, every single time that I've had a parent come in and saying, I've just found out that my kid has been doing X, and an ex could be any number of things. I can tell you that 99% of the time, they found out by finding out on the kid's phone. So just to be a little bit of a devil's advocate here, it also gives us that window into what's going on. That if we didn't have these phones, we wouldn't know what our kids are doing. And not all the mistakes they're making are ones that are online mistakes. Some of them are in the real world kind of mistakes. So perhaps we need to look at this, at these phones as a vehicle for us to be more involved.
That makes me uncomfortable, actually.
Well, I don't know. I'm playing devil's advocate here because I hear this all the time. I'm not saying this is the way to go, but I'm wondering if it's a different way to look at it.
I think it is a communication mechanism and a way for our children to socially interact. I don't want to call their phone a parental surveillance tool.
I agree with the surveillance construct or word associated with, but I take your point, David, because in my experience, the phone misbehavior has really just been symptomatic of something else and larger. And luckily, if I was a good, caring, paying attention parent, which I think I am, I'm able to see it. But it has added information to my understanding and some very clear-cut kind of in-your-face kind of examples of what needs to be addressed or dealt with.
And I've had in the last month, I've had two parents who brought their kid in concerned that the kid is depressed or may even be suicidal based on things that they saw on their phone. Had they not found that stuff, they wouldn't have.
Do you know how they found it? Because that's what I'm curious about. Do they monitor regularly with a technical tool? Do they pick it up randomly?
It randomly.
Yeah.
They weren't using any kind of software technology to mirror what they're seeing, what their kids are putting on their phone onto another device or anything like that.
I'm going to push back on the assumption that the always-on monitoring is going to work. In my experience, my friends have said it's given them a false sense of security because they have actually not picked up the phone and looked at it. So it's a much more active, which is also why I'm not crazed about, although I might reconsider the kind of automatic off or automatic time limits. You have to go down and, to the basement and say, kid, get off the iPad or get off the screen or whatever. That forces an in real world conversation between you and your child, sometimes awkward and difficult, but it's kind of the abdication of agency and of kind of the conversation. If you just say, oh, it just went off, sorry, easy.
We know when it goes off because we hear the scream from the basement.
Oh yeah, dad!
When the PS4 shuts.
Are you kidding me?
So I told you that, first of all, we've received a bunch of emails from people who are listening about this notion of privacy, because I talk about parental controls a lot. And of course, I explained the different controls, and just because some parental controls have nothing to do with privacy, it's limiting content, but others do. But we received a bunch of emails, and then I went online and looked in some parenting community groups. Have you ever looked at these in DC? Because
Yes. Yeah, I had to leave because they were so vitriolic.
Oh. We're moms in D.C. dads in D.C. You see these things.
But there were, I looked for conversations about this exact issue and hundreds of posts and going back and forth. And so here was a whole wing or a group all took this position in it pretty strongly. Here's one. I'm just going to read it out. So my children will never have privacy. I am their mother. This is my house. I am determined to know everything that goes on under this roof. When my kids are teenagers, they will know that at any moment I can ask them to hand over their cell phone, laptops, whatever equipment they're carrying, so I can see what they're talking about and who they're talking to.
That was a dramatic reading, by the way.
It was excellent.
It was. It was very good.
I was visioning it even, more intense than that. But okay, maybe it was more calm.
I have to say, some of that rings true for me. I have whipped out that, I paid for that phone. I mean, every once in a while I'll say, when you can afford your own phone, you can set your own rules. But I think it's, again, a stepped up. It's what's age appropriate. What's age appropriate for an 8-year-old is not what's age appropriate for a 12-year-old. And again, it also depends on the individual kid. So we have a kind of constant conversation going on in our house with each of the kids on each of their own level. I think the hardest thing is to see them make mistakes. I think that's really the difference between the Gen X, experience. And this one is the long-term consequences of what is posted, are far worse than what we were, sending notes on little pieces of paper in the classroom.
So, I mean, I have this discussion also on a regular basis in my office. And a big part of it is, just like with any other piece of adolescence, is development of trust. And how do you earn trust? And that's the discussion I'm having with a lot of 13, 14, 15-year-olds. How do you show your parents that you have demonstrated that you're ready for that?
I think knowing that there's this backdrop safety net that I'm occasionally, or more than occasionally, checking, my kids have come forward and self-confessed. Maybe it's an Irish Catholic thing as well. I think also I have antediluvian gender roles about kind of, you know, the girls are just as aggressive as the boys are, and there's lots of interaction.
Is that true? I'm going to pause. You have one boy, one girl, but they're young.
I do, yeah.
Okay. You think it's true the boys are the girls are as...
several of my friends who are mothers of boys have said they felt that their boys were really being kind of pursued actively in ways that were far more mature and developed than the boys were at the age. Again, I don't think you can generalize at all. I'm just saying that the assumption that I've made, which was like the girls are going to be the victims or the girls are going to be the recipients of it, does not always bear out.
No, I think. Right.
I think that's a really good observation. I mean, I'm new to this whole world. My fifth grader only recently started texting. He's the boy. Definitely found that the most interesting conversation I've had with him in a while was around the fact that he was then pursued via text message by a girl. You know, it was the first time, he's a fifth grader, and he, "Mom, I'm not ready for this." And he went to have a talk about it, and it was really wonderful.
And
it was like a whole entree. So we took a look at the whole chain of text messages, and we talked about how to respond. And my husband and I had completely different reactions about how to respond. And then we talked about why we were having different reactions about that. And it was a really interesting conversation, all brought about from text messaging. But in that case, and I, of course, my son knew I would be checking at some point, probably, although I don't read every single thing. He brought it to us.
There's just not going to be a bright line, right? It's not, I mean, so for some people, there really is a bright line, right? So some of these moms said, "You have no right to privacy, full stop." And then others went in the completely other direction. On the no privacy, this one was good. So this one said, "My son will be 20 this November."
Oh my goodness.
"And you bet you're blank. I check his phone, email, and Facebook regularly." Yep.
You've just gotten into the helicopter parenting episode, right?
And right. Wow.
The kids in that burning University of Maryland dorm that didn't know how to call 911, they called their parents first. Like, we have to raise grown-ups. There's that great book. You should get that woman on.
It goes on,
podcast,
and then it
right?
says, I won't fill in everything else, but it says, blah, 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 no privacy. And it ends with, "And until he moves out on his own, this will continue."
Well, how about one rule, which is don't lie to your kids, right? If you are going to be always monitoring them,
that's
at least
a great
let
point.
Them know that you're always monitoring. I mean,
right.
Whatever the contract is, both sides have to hold up to the contract. And if that's the parent or the culture or the family that you are, again, I think you're right. We don't get to decide for everybody. What I would recommend is have the conversation with your child about what you're doing. I mean, my kids know, and they know what the consequences are for what their actions will be. And they know that I do spot check and that I actually do. It's not just an idle threat, right? So I think it's really having a transparent relationship with you, the kid, and the digital device.
So I'm going to call you out a little bit here and say, okay, at what point, what is your litmus test for which you say you are allowed to have full privacy on your phone?
That's a great question. You're not calling me out. You're actually making me think about it. We haven't reached it yet, as I know that answer.
Right.
Maybe, you know,
30?
6 months or a year of no incidents or no bad language. Or you're right. It's about building trust. We've had some loss of trust in our household. So we're probably in the rebuilding stage with several, more than one of the children right now. So,
and I think that's universal. But Laura, let me ask you, let's say you have a 14-year-old who demonstrates perfection for a year. Is that 15-year-old now entitled to full privacy?
I'm not sure I would go that far. Complete and total, like, zone of privacy around their devices. I think I might be fewer spot checks. I think it might be much more infrequent. I think they will just slow down over time. But I think as long as I'm paying for it, and
okay, you know, Mom,
wait. I'm going to bring this out, pull this out a little bit longer. You may be paying for it until they're 22 years old.
but
some parents might be paying for it.
I really do think age of majority for sure.
Okay.
A dear friend whose child, we were just talking about some medical stuff, and she said, well, you know, she's 20 and she's away at school. And even though I'm still paying for tuition, whatever, it's all her. And she can tell me what she wants to tell me. And I had a lot of respect for that. They had a very open conversation about some conditions, some medication. But for me, I would not be checking, and we are not checking, the devices of college students returning home. We are not checking 18-year-olds. They have a lot more freedom, but they've also earned it.
So playing devil's advocate again,
I will say that I will say that, that you know, we had a show called The Magical Age of 13.
I was just going to say, you need to do The Magical Age of 18.
So I mean, The Magical Age of 18, yes, they are legally adults, but I mean, I will actually say that, well, I think an 18-year-old in 2019 is in many respects a 14 or 15-year-old from 1992 in terms of maturity, in terms of ability to see consequences, that type of thing. So the devil's advocate piece that I'm going to play here is that you would not give a 14-year-old full access, and as long as you're paying for it and all stuff like that, but yet as an 18-year-old, you're saying, yes, I would, even though developmentally they're going to make the same mistakes, if not worse ones, when they're 18.
Totally take your point, and I agree with you that we are all over-parenting our children. I mean, at least in this area, in this cohort, in this socioeconomic bracket. I mean, I've had parents, my teenagers go on the metro unattended. My 13-year-old started taking the metro downtown to go to the museums by herself. I have got the looks I have gotten from other parents. And I think you're right. You also know your child, right? They're one 13-year-old is not the, even in the same household and the same parents, is not the same as the next one. So I think I'm candidly doing a slightly better than the average job of giving her the skills to be a fully fledged adult, sometimes maybe a little too soon though, and have had to pull some of those back. So you're right, there's no magical age, just like, you know, 50 is just a number as well. But I think for these kids that I have in front of me right now, 18 is going to be, you know, or roughly late teens are going to be a very different thing for them.
This is where actually a device will matter, so it won't apply to a laptop necessarily, but how about tracking the location of your kids by where their phone is? Are you doing that?
I can do it if I want, meaning it's on the phone. I only do it if there's an emergency or there. Actually, we've really had to use it once because one of my girls left it in the dressing room of a store at the mall. That was actually the last time we used it.
So that's when you did find your, okay.
If there's an emergency or if somebody were an hour late for curfew or, you know, missing, you know, or like AWOL for some period of time, sure, I would look them up. But it is possible for sure.
It's not just possible. I mean, a lot of apps, you can just pull it up and you'll see exactly where they are on the bus, right? You can know exactly where your kids are at all times during the day, so that, you know.
Although I will say that I did do that with our son a couple of weeks ago, and he came home and opened the door and said, "Dad, why are you tracking me?" Because he gets a notification. Your phone's been found. so they will know they're being tracked.
But that goes to Nuala's point, and I'm pretty passionate about this too, which is the transparency and honesty piece. I think we ought to be honest with our kids and say, up front, right? I love you. I care about you. Maybe I don't trust you at this moment in time. And so we are going to spot check. We are going to look. If I'm monitoring, I'm monitoring. And yes, I can find your phone. So I think it shouldn't be a surprise. And I think they ought to know.
Well, I think conversation is really important. And again, I also think of this as how to train them to be digital citizens, right? I realize they're going to experiment with different identities online, as Nuala's pointed out, but I want my kids to be consistently in the analog world, more or less have the same values and character in the digital world. And so I think they, you know, in our household, we use shorthand to try to reinforce, and we use your three C's. We use the three R's, which is respect, resourcefulness, and responsibility. And we talk about it all the time, you know, and I want them to really have those be their North Stars, no matter where they are. If they're not, then they're not really earning my trust, right?
Carol made it an interesting point, and I didn't copy this, but there was a whole thread about this. There was a group of parents on this debate around privacy in children that said, "I'm trying to teach my child how to be a good digital citizen in the future. And I think that if I invade their privacy now, if I monitor or go check and they don't feel like there's a zone of privacy, that they're going to get a wrong sense of this for the future. And maybe they do that to their partner in the future, or they have just the wrong sense of digital privacy." I may be articulating that wrong.
Yeah, no, this is the thing that I think a lot about. And this is what I talk to my children a lot about, is right now you don't have a ton of privacy from me and what you're doing online. And it's very limited what they're doing online. But you should also be aware that you have almost no privacy online, full stop. Like, that is not a private space, and you may think it is, and you may try to set your settings so that it is, but really everybody can screenshot everything, okay?
You were asking a question also about boundaries between self and partner, or equal as opposed to parent and child.
So they're not the same, but I think it's an interesting observation by a group of parents who said, this was in the column of, "I will not violate my child's privacy," that, you know, what are you teaching them for when they're an adult about relationships, about boundaries, about privacy online? Because there are all kinds of stories of spouses using phones or ex-spouses using devices.
I think they look at the adult relationships that they see. I mean, I would not pick up my partner's phone. I don't know his password. I don't know anything about it. It's a digital life. And I trust him. I think if you're not trusting, there's something else. And this is a symptom and it's a device, but it's that lack of trust in an equal adult relationship, it signals to me there's a larger conversation. But I don't know, I'm going to ask the doctor, like, you know, how much does the parent-child relationship inform the adult relationships that, you know, this seems to me just an example of a larger theme.
I think that, yes, obviously kids are going to some degree, emulate their parents and what they learn early in life. You know, this is not rocket science here. One of the things I do think about when I think about this whole entire thing about privacy with kids and even in this context is just remembering that kids want to feel safe. So, you know, and that comes from, you know, when they are toddlers, preschoolers, they want to know that they're being looked after, that they're safe, even as they're trying to explore the world and want to try and get some independence. So I would actually argue that when you're hitting adolescence, you know, or even pre-adolescence, they may say they want privacy, and I'm going to totally go on a limb here, but they still want to be felt like they are safe, like they're okay, because they still fundamentally, I think, believe I'm going to be okay here in my room, in my house, with my parents. And I think that it's okay for them to have those their privacy kind of infringed upon, and then little by little release that, you know, kind of let them spread their wings a little bit. So I'm not sure that as much as kids are going to argue and say, I need my privacy, there's a certain comfort, I think, that many of them have knowing that there's someone else who's looking out for them to keep them safe.
We've been here quite a while, and be respectful of your time. So I want to give you each an opportunity, if you have anything you want to share, like our audience's parents. So thoughts that you might have or not.
I want to hear Nuala's thoughts because she's gone through it all.
I guess I would ask for compassion among parents and also a little less fear. Again, I've had more positive conversations with other parents when I have approached with compassion than when, how could your child say that to my child online? That sort of thing.
Right.
I actually think that's also part of the safety net. It really does take a village. Like I really have begun to be both humbled and grateful for the other, mostly mom friends, but also dad friends in my life who have opened up about whatever they're struggling with. And then again, everybody has got their struggle, whatever it is. So I really am still a little bit of a skeptic that this has profoundly reshaped society or the parent-child relationship. Mm-hmm. Or I think these are maybe higher risk, higher speed, velocity, volume examples of stuff people did to each other 50 years ago or 100 years ago or whatever. So I think not freaking out, I guess I would leave it with the kindness to self, others, and child, a compassion and a curiosity as opposed to a judgment, and a sense that this too shall pass, hopefully, for all of us. But I do like it. I think it's baby steps and it's gradual and incremental trust.
Yeah, I guess I would say I encourage parents to have a conversation with their kids about what different tech they're using in their lives. I have this with my kids already and they're pretty little, but okay, you want to do that. How does it work? What is the goal of this? To get on the game with them or get on the app with them or become a user of that themselves so that they can understand and maybe anticipate a little bit some of the, I'm speaking like a lawyer here, risks associated, right? But do a little bit of an initial risk assessment and maybe even have a conversation at the outset, because I think it's one thing to have a kind of general conversation in your family about what are my expectations, and a completely different thing to really translate that into a, okay, this is a photo sharing app, and let me tell you where the boundaries are in this particular kind of situation. You may not send the following kinds of photos. And it's not just me saying that. You could actually be charged criminally for child pornography, right? Like, and here's why I'm telling you this, right? But you have to understand how the tech works that your kids are using in order to have that conversation.
I think that's a great last point. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate your time and the thoughtful conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
That was a really incredible conversation with Terrell and Nuala on a wide range of topics. And considering who our guests are, two women who are preeminent experts in the areas of technology and privacy and the like, it is fascinating to hear that they agree that, you know, parenting is bumpy. This is not going to be a smooth road, not in the real world, not in the digital world. And that they were pretty candid with us, which I love. And that even with the best of intentions, for all parents, expert or not, that there are challenges and it just doesn't go the way you want. And that being a good role model, you know, is not always practical. It is not easy to do. And as moms and as dads, we're all just kind of doing the best we can.
Here's just some key themes that I heard, Mark. And one is that all four of us felt that parents really should review what our kids are saying and doing online, and no one agreed with the point of view that parents should never violate our kids' privacy. This kind of privacy should evolve over time, and kids gaining more trust as they earn it, as they get older. Certainly during the middle school years, parents need to pay close attention to kids as they are first learning how to navigate this digital world. But if you're gonna monitor your kids online, let them know. Be honest about it. Be clear about expectations. Be clear about privacy in the home, what's expected, as well as online. My topic that I brought up in the beginning is that if you're going to monitor your kids online, get ready to learn things that you maybe didn't want to know about your kid or someone else and how you're going to deal with it. And kids are learning they really don't have privacy online, and that's not a bad lesson. If you want something to be private, you say it to a person face-to-face during a private conversation.
So, David, I think those were great takeaways from today's episode, but I also want to highlight that these are opinions. And in fact, there isn't necessarily a right or wrong here, that different people will approach these issues differently, that every kid and family will be different.
Yep.
And there are always going to be circumstances that require a different approach. Again, there was a lot of agreement today, but everyone's different. Every child is different. And we want to acknowledge and respect that. But one thing that I feel that is common in all situations, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that we all seem to feel that maintaining an open, honest, and ongoing conversation with our children on all of these topics is still one of the best ways to keep them safe and have them have a healthy, productive digital life.
Well, thanks for listening to Their Own Devices. This show is a conversation, and we'd love to hear from you.
How are you balancing digital safety and your desire to protect your children from harm with their privacy interests? Do you feel that your kids have a right to privacy, even from parents? Do you have tips for other parents?
Email us at hello@theirowndevicespodcast.com. Their Own Devices is hosted by Mark Roman and David Reitman.
This podcast is part of the Podglomerate Network and is recorded at Clean Cut Studios in Washington, D.C. This episode was edited by Ryan Dan.
Be sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. It will help other parents find the show and get the info they need. We'll see you next time.
The Podglomerate. A Sonic Universe.